Coming up this half hour, oh, that barking dog. What to do about a dog that barks when left alone? Also in this episode, we'll get tips on how to save money on rabbit care and learn why cats bury their business. Let's start with rabbits. Five tips for saving money on rabbit care. This post was originally published on the Pet Finder blog. The author, Mary Lempert, is the founder and manager of the Rabbit Advocate, where this blog post originally appeared. Most rabbit parents know that rabbits are not cheap pets. Their medical care is as exotic animals can add up, and they seem to love chewing on your most expensive items, clothes, furniture, equipment, etc. However, there are several easy ways to reduce the costs of their daily care and manage your rabbit expenses more effectively. Here are just a few. Hay. Buy in bulk from the farm. Buying small bags of hay from pet stores can get expensive fast. Buying hay directly from a farmer can cut costs way down. Ordering hay in 50-pound boxes online from farms is already a bargain compared to the small bags from the pet stores, but taking a trip to a local farmer to buy a bale is really the way to go. A bale of Timothy hay, which can last several months, typically costs about $10. Vegetables. Ask your grocery store for veggie scraps. Ask staffers at your local grocery store to collect their vegetable scraps for you. Grocery stores throw away tons of perfectly good veggies, including carrot, beet, and radish tops, or the outer layers of lettuces, cabbage, and other greens. Farmers markets are also a fantastic source for free vegetables. Be sure to never use vegetables that look wilted or old, and wash everything extra careful. Another idea is to try growing your own mint, which grows like a weed. Also, parsley and other herbs in your garden. Be sure to check which plants are toxic to rabbits before feeding anything new. Litter. Check the cat aisle. A little insider knowledge here can save you some big bucks. If you use Yesterday's News or some other litter brand that is also marketed for cats, buy the bags in the cat litter section, as they tend to be much cheaper per pound than the bags sold in the small animal section. Avoid clay and pine-based litters, since both have been associated with serious health risks to rabbits. The litter box. Get creative. A litter box is really just a plastic box, so why pay extra for a fancy cat litter pan from a pet store when you can grab a shallow plastic box from Walmart for half the price? Toys. Try DIY. There are a lot of expensive bunny toys available, but it seems more often than not, rabbits just love playing with old-fashioned toys that don't cost a cent, such as cardboard boxes, toilet paper rolls stuffed with hay, and homemade cardboard tunnels or castles. Baby toys such as plastic keys on a ring can be cheaper than similar products sold in pet stores. Just make sure the plastic is hard and not the teething kind, which can be chewed and ingested by rabbits. And one thing not to skip on, pellets. There's a wide variety of pellets available with a wide variety of price tags. You don't need to go for the most expensive bag out there, but you do need to make sure the first ingredient is Timothy hay as opposed to alfalfa. Alfalfa hay can be good for rabbits up to a year old, but has too much calcium and fat for adult rabbits. You might have to pay more for high-quality Timothy-based pellets, but with all the money you've saved with the other tips listed here, it will be a fair trade-off. Next, the burning question. Why do cats bury their waste? This article is written by Susan Logan McCracken and appeared in Catster, June of 2020. Cats are super easy to potty train. They instinctively know how to use a litter box. But why do they bury their waste? Cats have a reputation for being low-maintenance pets. One of the reasons, they are super easy to potty train. In fact, they instinctively know how to use a litter box. All you need to do is show them where it is by placing them in it, and they know what to do. the coolest thing about a little kitten you've been bottle feeding is for after you put him in the litter box on a full tummy for the first time, he starts digging, says Dusty Rainbolt, a feline behaviorist who has rescued and rehomed more than 1,500 cats. It's the most amazing thing ever. The internal programming of a kitten is incredible. That's because cat litter mimics a cat's preferred bathroom in nature. Cats are not the only species to bury their waste. Other species that bury their waste include woodchucks, minks, armadillos, and weasels. In the wild, felines dig a hole, do their business, and then bury it. And for good reason. It appears to be a survival mechanism. Dusty says covering their waste conceals their presence from predators and more dominant cats. Feline bathroom habits. Interestingly, large cat species that have no predators, lions, tigers, and jaguars, do not bury their waste. Instead, they use their excrement to claim their territory. Smaller cat species bury their waste to keep predators off their tracks and prey off their guard. Cats will normally eliminate on the outer edges of their territory, not in their home base, Dusty says, adding that cats do this to protect themselves from parasites. Very rarely do cats mark with poop, Dusty says. They mark with urine, but again, they spray mark the edges of their territory. Knowing how instinctive it is for cats to use the litter box should alert you that something is wrong if they stop. Dusty, the award-winning author of Cat Scene Investigator, Solve Your Cat's Litter Box Mystery, says that kittens come programmed with that instinct. That instinct is very pure, and as they get older, we do things to mess with that program. And what are some of those things that we do? We put the food bowl next to the litter box, Dusty says. No one wants to eat in the bathroom. We put repellents in the litter box, scented litter, or we clean it with an orange cleaner or use something that feels uncomfortable on their feet. Cats are repelled by citrus scents. Or they're bullied and they're afraid to go into the litter box, she says. When they're bullied, they will find another place to go. Odd litter box behaviors. Sometimes very young kittens can't quite get the hang of the litter box. They may play in it, sleep in it, or avoid it altogether. If they're avoiding it, it could be that their mom wasn't around to show them how to use it, or the litter box itself might be too big for them. Make sure they can get in and out of it by themselves. Adult cats prefer more space in the litter box, enough to turn around comfortably. My cat's favorite box is an Ace Hardware utility tub that's 3 feet long and 2 feet wide, says Dusty. The kittens will slide around and litter scatters everywhere. But is that a bad thing? That's the response you want, Dusty says. A cat should enjoy going to the litter box. He should enjoy digging in the litter, kicking it around. If he's doing his thing and leaving immediately, he has a problem with the facilities you've provided. The box is dirty. He doesn't like the smell or the texture of the litter. The box is too small. The box is covered. He should want to dig. Dusty recalls one cat who would leave his favorite toy in the food bowl, the water bowl, and the litter box. The box is very clean, so he was comfortable enough to put his toys in there, she says. If your cat won't use the litter box, if your cat stops using the litter box, make an appointment with your veterinarian to rule out a medical cause. Certain health conditions can cause pain when urinating or defecating, and your cat will associate that pain with the litter box. Once you've ruled out a possible medical condition, consider possible behavioral triggers, a new person or a pet in the household or even a neighborhood cat in your yard can create anxiety for your cat. Cats may stop using the litter box if it's near something loud and scary like a barking dog or a noisy appliance. Or if it's a neighborhood cat, your cat may start marking territory. If anxiety and territorial issues are not to blame, it could be the litter or litter box itself. It could be too small, or there may not be enough litter boxes. It also might not be clean enough. Dusty says signs a cat has a problem with the litter box include signs. A cat has a problem with a litter box. Sitting on the edge, reluctant to put his feet down. Shaking his paws. Running out after using the litter box. Sometimes it's not the box, but the litter. Cats prefer sandy, unscented litter, Dusty says. If you go to the beach barefooted, you want to walk on nice, soft sand, not something that feels like gravel. If you want to know how it will feel on a cat's paws when you pour the litter, the clean litter in, press your forearm on top of it to see how it feels. If it's sharp and uncomfortable, your cat feels your pain. A cat's sense of smell is also stronger than ours. Things we find pleasant and innocuous may actually repel a cat, Dusty says. They're also closer to it. When we're scooping, we're still 2 or 3 feet above it. Like humans, cats are particular about their bathroom habits and want a clean commode. Work with them and learn from them to provide what they like. And now, oh, that barking dog. Jackie Lynn Schultz, CPDT, Companion Animal Program Advisor, National Outreach ASPCA, posted this on Pet Finder: barking when left alone. Of all dog behavior problems, perhaps the most distressing one is the dog who barks when left alone. Incessant volleys of yips, woofs, and whines are an irritant to those who live in close quarters or for those who need some peace and quiet in their life. These latchkey barkers fit several profiles. It is important to determine which one or more describes your dog. Misreading the dog may result in a failure to extinguish the problem. The first is the genetically prone bark. Virtually all terriers and many small dogs, particularly Maltese, poodles, and miniature schnauzers, fit into this category. These breed types have been pre-programmed to bark at movement or noise within their range. Sensitive alarm barkers, once bred to alert the farmer of the fox in the hen house, now announce that the phone is ringing, the neighbors are home, or that the elevator has arrived. They must be trained to limit their barking. Training them to bark on command gives you control. You can turn it on or off on your orders. It's not that you don't want them to bark, you just want them to be appropriate. Find a suitable place or time where the yappy dog can bark to his heart's content. The second is the alpha territorial. These barkers are most often unneutered males and or guarding breed types. They believe that they are protecting their yard, house, and general airspace from intruders such as the mailman, a squirrel, a passing dog, or a neighbor. Neutering may take the overprotective and or territorial edge off the intact dog. Training will get the genetically protective dog's instinct in line. Blocking the dog's view of the property lines, stockade instead of chain link fencing, and keeping him from patrolling the area around the front door or front porch may assist in cutting down the owner absent barking. Monitor this type of dog carefully. Do not permit him to bark at passers-by when you are home. If you cannot silence him when you are there, you can't expect much when you're not. The third is the demanding barker. This confident soul does not want to be left alone because the fun stops. He stands at the door and commands you to return to play with him. Both barking setups, explained below, and engaging toys work well to quiet this imp's demands, as does the citronella anti-bark collar. The fourth is the bored, under-exercised. Sporting, hound, and herding breeds were bred to work all day long. Many retrievers, pointers, setters, collies, and the like now find themselves sadly under-exercised, especially in the urban environment. These dogs need to be kept busy. If not, boredom turns into barking, not to mention chewing, pacing, and digging. Most need at least 2 hours of vigorous aerobic exercise a day. If you're going to be gone for an extended period of time, over 6 hours, an hour of mentally challenging and physically active fun and games is mandatory. You should leave behind a panting, heaving, utterly exhausted dog as you set off for the day. Offering them breakfast from a stuffed Kong or food dispensing toy can also keep them busy. The fearful, anxious dog. Some of these dogs fall into the category of toy and miniature breed types. Dogs that have been passed around from home to home and shelter rescues also fit into this group. Their histories may include coddling and overprotective handling, lack of proper socialization, or isolation. Dogs that have never been out of the backyard or permanently paper-trained apartment dwellers are candidates for anxiety behaviors if placed in a new home environment. These dogs suffer from separation anxiety when left behind, even for brief periods. Chewing, barking, house soiling, and digging at doors or windowsills are some typical responses. The majority of these dogs need to be properly socialized to the world around them. Obedience work with plenty of praise builds confidence, yielding a more stable dog, a dog with a better ability to cope. Environmental changes to minimize owner absence. The anxious dog may feel less stressed out when home alone if he's confined to a kennel crate, either the enclosed airline type, a molded plastic, or a wire crate draped with a sheet or a tablecloth. With less space to worry about, just the bed and a chew toy, many dogs just curl up and calm down. A word of warning regarding dogs with severe separation anxiety or anxiety problems, often a rescue or a shelter dog. Some dogs may go to pieces in a crate. They will shake, slobber, struggle, and exhibit extreme escape behavior. In these instances, you must seek the counsel of a professional dog trainer or applied animal behaviorist who is well-versed in canine behavior problems and can customize a program for the dog that may include short-term drug therapy. Barking setups, as previously mentioned. Keep the dog in the quietest part of the house. A dog with behavior problems has not earned the run of the house. Keep curtains and/or shades drawn. If you don't have adequate window coverage, get some. Hang a sheet or blanket across the window. A darker environment has a calming effect on most dogs. Additionally, there is no visual stimuli to provoke the territorial or bored dog. Curtains muffle sounds from the outdoors for alarm barkers. Leave a radio or TV on as white noise. In many households, the stereo, TV, or radio is on from morning till night as long as someone is home. Imagine how loud the silence is when everyone is gone and the sound system is turned off. Beyond masking outside noises, leaving the stereo, TV, or radio on gives the oral appearance of your presence. As you leave, give the dog an "only when I'm gone" chew toy with your scent imparted on it. This toy should be something spectacular, a sterilized beef bone stuffed deeply and thoroughly with canned dog food or cheese bread, served frozen or chilled, or a flavorful beef-basted knotted rawhide bone, or a stuffed Kong. Give it to the dog upon leaving. Rub it between your palms several times before you go. Not only is this a diversion tactic, it actually makes being left alone not so bad, as this is the only time the most wonderful thing in the world appears. If you have tried all of the above and you are still finding notes from your neighbors, you must desensitize the dog to your departures with barking setups. Setups take time. Slow incremental progress is a necessary part of the program. Be prepared to use a long weekend or some vacation time for the program. First, imitate your daily departure routine. Do you usually put on makeup, search about for keys, gloves, etc., pack a gym bag, or throw out the garbage? Make the dog think that this is just like any other daily departure. Second, while giving him his special goodbye toy, get eye contact with him and tell him in a firm and matter-of-fact manner to be quiet until you return. Please, no long-winded emotional scenes. No begging, pleading, or whining for him to be quiet. It will only serve to emotionally charge the situation and further stress out the dog. leave for a brief period of time, just a minute or two to start out with. If you wait for an elevator, ring for it and get in. Go one floor down and come back up using the stairs. Wait 1 to 2 minutes. If the dog has not barked, return and gently praise. If you hear him bark or begin to bark, mark the behavior by a sharp rap on the door with a solid object like a brass key ring and start timing again. Each time the dog barks, rap on the door and set the timer back to zero. It may take a half hour to get 1 to 2 minutes of silence. When you do, go in and praise. Leave 15 to 30 minutes later and repeat. The goal, of course, is to be able to stay away for longer periods of time without having to correct the dog for barking. The time away must be built up in small intervals. Set goals, 5, 10, 15 minutes, and go back in and praise the dog if he remained quiet for the set amount of time. Don't wait for an undetermined amount of time and correct the dog for finally barking. Silence must be praised. Appropriate behavior must be acknowledged. Most dogs who can remain silent for 2 hours can usually stay quiet for an 8 to 10 hour workday. It is building up to that first hour or so that may take several days of setups to achieve. Barking problems are rarely solved in a day. Barking setups can be tedious, but they usually work if you take the time to do them properly. Let your neighbors know that you are not ignoring their complaints, that you understand their discomfort, and you are taking steps to correct the problem. Quite often, they will cut you slack if they know their complaints have not fallen upon deaf ears. And in the Food for Thought department, this article written by Matthew Willis and posted on JSTOR Daily, September of 2019. The rise and fall of the pet bird. Pet birds were considered ideal role models for middle-class life. Who or what determines what a pet is? Historically, the answer to this question is obvious. Social norms determine what is a pet and what isn't. And past societies have had a wider view of pet keeping than we do now. Teach a parrot to curse and it will curse continually, make night and day hideous with its imprecations, wrote Apuleius in the 2nd century CE. He's quoted in classicist Francis D. Lazenby's survey of the range of pets kept in ancient Greece and Rome. Among these were parrots, ravens, pigeons, peacocks, doves, swans, magpies, hares, mice, weasels, fawns, goats, cicadas, and turtles. Then as now, there was love lost on the death of a pet. In the Hellenistic and Roman Empire eras, the animal epitaph, full of exaggerated pathos, became a thing. Just as the change in taste of the time saw an increased interest in children and slaves, so was it fashionable to possess favorite animals, and equally fashionable to compose epitaphs for pampered pets. While he notes that weasels vied with cats for the Roman pet of the choice, there are a lot of birds in Lazenby's list. Birds were kept across Europe for centuries after the classical period. That tradition was carried across the Atlantic. Birds were the most popular indoor pets in the United States. Through the first decade of the 20th century, writes the veterinarian Crystal G. Pollock. She continues, the popularity of pets crossed class lines as well as racial and ethnic barriers. Solitary caged birds were common in working class households, whereas wealthy families often kept a variety of birds in aviaries. Goldfinches, northern cardinals, and northern mockingbirds were most popular, but a dozen other species were kept as well, including Baltimore orioles, bobolinks, rose-breasted grosbeaks, eastern bluebirds, indigo buntings, and blue jays. The birds were kept for their song, companionship value, and supposed exemplars of monogamy, ideal role models for middle-class life. All of this was outlined a century ago. The millinery industry slaughtered birds for their feathers. Meanwhile, wild birds' exploitation threatened numerous species with extinction by World War I. And so this kind of pet keeping was eventually outlawed. It remains illegal to capture or kill migratory bird species. The law extends to a ban on the possession of feathers, eggs, and nests. Egg collectors still threaten endangered species in the UK. Paradoxically, tropical species were not included in American laws, which is why people are allowed to keep parrots captive far from their native habitat. In 2011, a survey estimated that more than 16 million birds are kept as pets in the U.S. This compares to around 90 million dogs and 94 million cats. Escaped or irresponsibly released exotic birds have been spotted in the wild in 43 U.S. states. They represent 56 non-native species. 25 of these species now breed in the wild in the U.S. because of the bird trade. Pollock notes that native songbirds, even though no longer kept as pets, still have honorary pet status in the U.S. By this she means they hold a special place in many people's hearts. And finally, train your pet to come to you when the fire alarm goes off. This is useful information, huh? From thepetshow.com, Megan Walbert writes, the next time you burn a batch of bacon, filling your kitchen with smoke and setting off your fire alarm, react quickly. Remove the pan, furiously fan the air around the alarm with a kitchen towel, and give your pet a treat. If your fire alarm goes off, call your pets and give them a treat. Eventually, they will come when the alarm goes off, saving you from wasting time looking for pets during an evacuation. You can do this when the alarm goes off unexpectedly, as well as when you test it, which the U.S. Fire Administration says we should be doing once a month. The resulting treat should make your dog or cat slightly less terrified of the blaring noise and more likely to come running for you instead of hiding under the chair, should a real fire ever break out. And that will do it for this week. I'm your host, Mary DeFranco. I hope you enjoyed the program. Thanks for listening. Please join me next time. And don't forget, please spay and neuter your pets. It's healthy for them and the environment.